Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Paranormal Horizons with your hosts, Jason Ophir and psychic medium Sherry. The show is about to begin. Good evening, everyone, and we are live from Times Square. Yes. We're joined with the talented... it's the second. It's not the new... We're past the new year. How's it going, Sherry?
Doing good. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. What's been going on with you?
Day. Oh, just staying home, just staying out of trouble, staying home. Just doing reading. That's pretty much about it. That's what I've been doing.
Well, it's good that you're doing something. Sounds like we're both somewhat busy. I've got a lot of updates. You know, this is not a paranormal update. This is what's going on in the crazy world of Jason updates. So whenever you're ready, I can begin.
Go for it.
So, there's a lot going on. But as you know, I have downgraded my employment from a full-time person working in a very busy laboratory in pathology, as we've talked about many times, to... working part-time by choice at an actual hospital. So it's a lot slower, it's a lot chiller, and so I'm excited about that. I did not receive the amount of training I probably should have received because of the inclement weather we've had up here. I called out on the snow days. So I got a few days of training, but I think I'm going to be okay. I know how to do everything, and a couple of things I'm a little sketchy about, but with time and getting through the uncomfortableness of a new situation, because I am always adverse to change. I don't like change. I am a distinct creature of habit. So in a few months, my nerves will subside and I will be enjoying my shorter shifts and more chill work environment. So I'm excited about that. And what else is going on?
What are you doing? Jason, what kind of work are you doing?
Well, before I was working in pathology at a central laboratory, you know, a big regional kind of deal, where it's very busy. Now, it's not as busy as if you were working in like a main laboratory where they're doing blood and stuff like that. It's pathology. So I'm getting the limbs, the tumors, all the disgusting stuff. But I'm doing this exact same thing. However, I'm now going to do it at a hospital. So basically what happens is there is a pathologist there at the hospital, and then there's me to assist the pathologist. And, you know, people go into surgery and they get whatever they're getting removed and they give it to me. And then I have to do all the bureaucratic stuff with it and make sure it gets sent to the central laboratory, where they'll do what they do with it. And I also assist in pathological procedures, such as when you go in, if somebody goes in to get samples taken from their thyroid or lymph nodes, I'm in the procedure room, and basically the radiologist is the one that's jamming the needles in these people's necks, and I'm sitting there and he hands me the needle, and then I make slides. You know, I squirt a little bit out of slides, squirt some in this bottle, squirt some in that bottle, and I do the slides, and then the pathologist reads them, and just to make sure they're not reading them to make, you know, to say if they have cancer. They just want to make sure they have enough cells. So if they don't have enough cells in the samples, and the radiologist has to keep poking and prodding those pesky little thyroid nodules and stuff like that. And there's a lot more to it. But that's basically what I do.
That sounds painful.
No, they numb it up with lidocaine and stuff like that. The ones that I've been to, I haven't heard anybody scream in pain or really have any issue with it. I don't think they feel it. But if you're squeamish of needles, which I'm not, because I was a phlebotomist, yeah, not great. Close your eyes.
Yeah, I don't like needles. I would be horrible. I'm petrified in needles. I don't like needles. Nope. Knock on wood. Pray to God I don't have to go through those kind of procedures or any more surgeries than I've already had. So, yeah, no surgeries or needles or anything like that. No, thank you. No, I just, yeah, I'm not the one. I don't even... When they you take my blood, I don't even look. I could care less. Mm-mm.
I've run into people that are like that. One of my old coworkers, who is a phlebotomist, I mean, all she does for years, over 10 years, is draw people's blood. And every now and then, you know, she'll need to get her blood drawn, and she'd have me do it. And absolutely petrified of getting stuck with a needle. And it was so funny because here's somebody that's poked somebody hundreds of thousands of times, but yet when them themselves need to get a blood draw, they freak out. And every time I did it, she would freak out and I would laugh.
Yep.
I would just laugh.
Yeah. And you know, I had my teeth done. It's interesting because I had my teeth done and my dentist is really good with the needle. I mean, he doesn't just jab you. You know, as he tells you to breathe in and breathe out, he's so gentle. He breathe and he actually, when he numbs your mouth, he takes the lip or the side of your lip or the bottom lip, wherever the region is, where he puts the Novocaine, and he actually just jiggles it while he's and tells you how to breathe. It's a lot easier than just somebody jabbing you with it. You know, putting it in, and his assistant did that too. I didn't even feel the needle going in. It was so clean. I did not literally feel the needle going into my gum. It was that clean.
That's nice.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing. She did a good job.
I've had some bad blood draws. Sometimes I even draw my own blood in the hand, which is challenging, but. Yeah, you know, since we're talking completely non-paranormal right now on health a little bit and pathology and blood draws, there's another thing that happened to me last week that it might be kind of gross, but it's fascinating nonetheless. I have always had, and I don't know why this is, a fixation with jamming things in my ears. Do you ever jam things in your ear, Sherry?
No. I'm purposely, but just to clean my ears, and they say you're not supposed to, but I don't know how you can clean your ears without taking a swab. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So they say that that's the
yeah,
worst thing
so.
To do to clean your ears is Q-tips, because you end up just pushing the wax back in there. What's it called? Cecum or something like that. And, you know, then it can become impacted towards the eardrum and become a bigger problem and more difficult to get out. So because I've had this long-standing fascination with jamming things in my ears, I mean, it'll be the end of pens. I mean, things I could easily poke my eardrum out. I don't know why. It's just like a weird thing. Maybe there's a mental disorder that is involving sticking things in your ears. But anyways, so I've done this for years and years, and it's to clean it, primarily to clean it, like you're saying. And I was so curious and had this almost unhealthy fascination with my ears. I thought it'd be a great idea to buy an otoscope camera that I can stick in my ears. So that's what I did. I ordered one. You know, I hook it up to a tablet. It's got a light on the end of it, and it comes with these various attachments where you can just kind of you can see what you're grabbing out of your ear. And so I bought that. I looked in my left ear, and, you know, my left ear is fine. It's clean. But I looked in my right ear, and I had it had to be earwax from 1980s, like the mid-80s. Like, that stuff was in there. I had been trying.
Down the bottom of the canal? Are you talking about the bottom of the canal?
I'm talking, like, starting to get close to the eardrum.
Oh, wow.
I tried for 2 months to get it out of there, to no avail. It was just too close to the eardrum. It wasn't coming, and every time I'd get real close, you know, I'd hit something and be like, oh, you know, that's not good.
Oh my.
So I struggled. Sleepless days and nights trying to get this earwax out. It became my mission. It became my sole focus in life. I was going to defeat this earwax. So I wasn't having any success. One time I even broke the attachment off the otoscope in my ear, freaked out. Fortunately, it came out because I was so desperately trying to get this little nougat of waxy goodness in my ear. And I pretty much had to give up on it. Well, the other night, two nights ago, I thought I'd give it attempt number 100. Let's get this out of there. And it was substantial. I'm not talking about a little earwax. It was like I said, from the 80s. And I failed. I woke up the next day, and my hearing was all messed up. Like, I would bend over and hear this cracking, and my ear felt like I had an ear infection. I felt pressure in my ear.
Yeah.
And I knew exactly what it was. It wasn't an ear infection. I had dislodged this little nougat. Well, it wasn't little. And it had probably rested on my eardrum. So I grabbed the otoscope, and I go in, and I'm like, oh, yep. It's pushing against my eardrum. Crap. What am I going to do? I can't get it out. I can't get it out myself. I'm like, I got to do something. I'm not going to roll through the weekend with my ear popping. I wasn't in any tremendous pain, but it was just annoying. So after work, I'm like, I don't have a primary care physician. I never picked one. So like, I'm just going to go to urgent care and just, you know, that's like a 2 second visit. They can just grab it or dissolve it or do whatever they do. So I go there, they deny me because they had already reached their quota for the day, which I thought was ridiculous, that was even a thing, that you could go to an urgent care and be turned away 2 hours before they close. But that's what happened. And then I was like, you know what, I'm going to go to Walgreens and I'm going to see what sort of treatments they have for it. So I went there, I bought this stuff, it's some sort of peroxide, not hydrogen peroxide, and I was too nervous to stick it in my ear. If you know how unpleasant it is to have fluid in your ear, it's horrific. And so I was like, I didn't do it. I bought it, and then I was like, okay, I'm just going to get some sterile saline so I can just fill my ear up. So I went back to Walgreens, found this stuff. I don't remember what it's called, but it's basically sterilized ocean water. And I did that. And lo and behold, half of that structure came out, and there's still some up against the eardrum, but I lost all my symptoms. You know, there's no more of the popping, cracking, and fullness. So I'm treating my ear every day, hoping that last piece comes out. But hats off to the people that invented, like, whatever it was I put in my ear, because that saved me, you know, the cost of having a doctor do it. And I'm sure the other piece will come out. So that is my ear story.
Wow. Hey. So what did you do? Did you just went and put it inside your ear? Is it a liquid or something? Or what did they do?
It's a pressurized spray bottle, and it's just really super unpleasant. And it just, you just tilt your head and you feel your ear. It's basically saline. And it softens everything up. And then I just sit there for a minute or two, let it kind of break down, and then just tilt my head real quick. And like I said, there's still a sizable chunk against the eardrum, but it's, for whatever reason, it's not irritating the eardrum. So my advice to anyone out there, and maybe this is just common sense for everybody. I mean, we all have ears, and actually people with impacted earwax, it's one of the most common reason people go to the doctor, but I'm now a big fan of the saline in the ears, and there's various oils you can use and stuff like that, so I'm a big fan now of that.
What do they go, why can't you just go to the doctor, just go to the doctor and have him take care of it?
Well, I couldn't because I didn't have a doctor.
Oh, okay, what do they do at the doctor? Get rid of it. How do they actually do? They do the same thing, or do they just do a different procedure?
They usually, from what I know, is they approach it from two different ways. They'll either do the same thing with something you pour in your ear to break it up, or they actually have the same kind of thing. They otoscope. They have various scoops and stuff, and it's a lot easier for them to do it than yourself. They also have micro vacuums. They stick it in your ear and vacuum and suction stuff up. But super common, and yeah, so that was my thing. We do have a caller, but I did want to mention one other thing about New Year's, completely unrelated to earwax, is as we've talked many times before that I am just horribly, horribly addicted to slot machines, right? You remember me talking about that?
Oh, yeah.
It's horrible. This has been going on for years. Like this, it's like what it's what I do. It's what I live for. It's become such a horrible addiction, and it's just whatever it does to the brain. It's terribly addictive. I see people out there that throw all their money away, their rent, stuff like that. Of course, I'm not that crazy, but any extra money I have after the bills are paid, I go do that. And it's a ridiculous, obscene amount of money. But anyway.
Wow.
Last year was a crazy, crazy year. I lost count, but I think I won 15 jackpots. Which,
wow.
Paying taxes on is going to just be a complete nightmare. And jackpots ranged anywhere from $1,500 to almost $4,000. But anyway, so as usual, I went out on the first of the year, and something happened to me playing that has never happened in the 12 or 13 years I've been doing this, which I find statistically close to impossible, which I thought I would share because it's never happened to me. I've never even heard of it happening to anyone. The person working there, I asked him, he said, no, he's never seen that before. And that was as I went to one of these restaurants that have these state-run lottery machines. And out of a sheer coincidence, one of my coworkers, who's even a bigger gambler than me, shows up. So she's sitting to my left. I felt pretty good about things, but the machine was just not being too kind to me. It's one of those things where you're just feeding it 20s every 30 seconds. My coworker was having even worse luck than me. I felt so sorry for her. So what happened that has never happened to me before was she's sitting next to me, and I hit a jackpot. No big deal. I don't even react. I'm used to getting jackpots. It's become so normal for me. So she sees that, and she's like freaking out. And then somebody sitting behind me is like freaking out. Oh my God. And to me, it's like, I'm dead inside. I have no emotion because I don't even know how many jackpots I've won in the last 10 years. So I continue to play. My instinct was to get off the machine because, surely nothing could happen again on this machine. And so I, 37 minutes after I won that jackpot, the machine spun out another jackpot. I've gone a year with maybe one jackpot, and 37 minutes, two jackpots. It was crazy. When the universe lines up for people, those people that go win and buy a $50,000 scratch it, and then they go the next week and they get another $50,000 jackpot. I don't believe it's luck. There's just some sort of universal energy, power of intention, whatever it is. When that door to prosperity opens, it floods in. And that's what happened then. So I was rather entertained by that. And
that's so cool. So you got two jackpots. That's wonderful.
Yeah, two within 37 minutes on the same machine.
Jeez. Well, hopefully I'll be able to do that one of these days. No.
Right.
If I did.
I hear all the time these people that have been playing these machines for 20 years, and they're like, I've never won a jackpot. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I've won 15. I won 7 in 3 weeks. Now, granted,
wow.
I play a lot. I play more than most. I'm like a high roller, I guess you could say, or maybe like a moderately high roller. But anyways, that was entertaining. So that was a good way to start the new year. We do have a caller.
Okay.
If I remember correctly, potentially from Hawaii. It's an 808. Isn't that Hawaii?
Yeah, it's from Hawaii. Yes, it is.
I knew it.
Yes.
I have some brain cells left.
Right on. Excellent. We'll take this caller, okay? Okay.
All right.
Hi, welcome
Hello.
To Paranormal Ride.
Hi.
Hi. What is your name?
Pearl.
Hi, Pearl. How? What can we do to help you?
Hi, Sherry.
Hi.
I was wondering if you have any advice for me. I'm a mother of four, and I'm 30 years old. And I've worked lots of odd jobs since I had my first baby when I was 17. And I've really been in I am married. I've been married for 12 years. But I'm, you know, depressed. And I wanted to know if you had any advice, like maybe what would be a good start to a career pathway or to better myself.
So, yeah, thank you for calling in. Jason, do you want me to just do a little bit of a reading? Is that okay?
Yeah, go for it. It's all you.
Yeah, it's been a few weeks. It's kind of nice. Yeah, Pearl. So, I'm gonna open up and see what's going on here. Open up the veil. So, I'm just going to say this. Yeah, definitely. The first thing I see is that you're very depressed. Not only are you depressed, not only with work. I'm getting that you love being a mom. You love your role. But I also see not only just depression with work, but also, I don't know why, but I feel that there's a rubber band. The relationship that you have with a husband is cohesive and not cohesive. Cohesive and not cohesive. So I don't know why I'm getting that, but I feel like, you know, you're close and then you stray apart. You're close and then you stray apart. Does that make any sense?
Yes.
Okay. So also, too, I also sense that everything's burdened on you. Now, I don't know anything about your mate. Can I get the first name of your significant other, husband, whatever? Can I get just the first name?
Neo.
What is it?
Dino,
I'm
like
sorry.
The,
what did you?
Dino,
okay.
The dinosaur.
Okay. Great. Wonderful. Okay. So yeah. I don't know why, but he could be very, and he's a very sweet person, but there's the other side of him that he can be kind of selfish, a little bit on the selfish side. Not very engaged. It feels like you're the one that does a lot of hands-on as far as keeping the house together, keeping the children on track. You're the mother finger. Does that make any sense to you?
It's spot on.
Okay.
It's spot on,
yes. That off, that back and forth. You know, he wants to be a father. He's there when he needs to be there. But I also get a sense that he's very much into his own little world. I could be wrong. Has he had prior, if not current, addictions? And I can say this. I don't know why, but I'm getting that there also could be prior and or current addiction. It could be alcohol, it could be drugs, it could be. But I feel there is some addictions going on, either past or current and or current. Does that make sense?
Yes, and it's just. It's a huge source of depression for me. Yeah, his addiction.
She said gambling, Sherry, which is odd because we were just talking about that.
Okay.
Gambling and drinking, but mainly gambling.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Okay. So that kind of answered what I felt. So right now, what I feel, and this is what I can suggest, is that it's hard to really disassociate or have attachments, especially if this energy is draining and he could be toxic at times and things like that. So what you can do is just try and concentrate on yourself. What are you good at? You're the kind of person, it depends. See, when you're going through your depression, you go highs and lows. High, I see your personality, high and low. High, you feel good at times, and then you go through this really, like really bottom of the pit. You don't know how to get out of it. And I'm going to be honest with you, what I'm getting is the only way is your saving grace is your kids.
Yeah.
They keep you going.
That's true.
And what you can do is to be able to move forward is to think of the things that you would like to do for yourself. What are the things that you are interested that, you know, you're, you know, when I just see your body and I feel your energy, it feels like you're very deficient in being creative. What are the things that really can help you work through whatever you want, whether it's, you know, it's like, you know, whether it's photography, whether it's you want to be, you want to work in sales, or you want to work in a corporation where you're going to be bookkeeping, or you want to be a stay home at mom, that kind of thing, and get paid for babysitting. You need to be able to look at yourself and say, what are the things that you're interested in? What are the things that might be something I might like? If you don't know, what are the things that you like? You know, do you like photography? Do you like helping elderly people, being a caregiver? You seem like a caregiving kind of person, and I don't know if that's
I
you.
Am.
But the thing is, with your energy, what I'm getting right now with your energy as a psychic is that you're an empath. You're an empath, and so when I see that, you can be very drained from other people's energy. You're a sponge, mm-hmm. So you're not able to block that, and you're actually whatever it takes on, whether it's your husband, whether it's a bad move from a customer, or you know, or a good person, or whatever, you take on that, and it permeates in your body. You need to learn to just say, okay, I'm not going to absorb anybody's energy. I'm going to be myself. I'm going to contain myself and be able to be strong enough to not absorb anybody's energy, let alone anybody's energy field. Okay?
Okay.
And you don't have to buy stuff to make, oh, I have to do this to steal. Yes, it helps. You know, if you want to go and get tourmaline, yeah, it helps if you just use. But you have to create the intention. Just like you're going to create the intention of what are you going to do for a job. That's the point. You called in. What do you want to do for your job? First of all, you'd be great. I think that with your situation with your kids, I think, you know, whether you want to go out for a few hours, 3-4 hours, or do you want to pay for a babysitter? I got the feeling that you're more of a homebody, but then again, you want to be able to be out there and go out to lunch with a girlfriend or just find some peace away from the kids. You want that balance. I see if you can find the best of both worlds and stay home and doing something you enjoy, get paid for it, still be able to watch the kids and be able to get paid and not go anywhere, that's the perfect thing. So you got to figure out what are the things that you're interested in. What are the things that you can do that you can be add value to other people's lives? Could be making things from Hawaii. You live in Hawaii. A lot of people in the mainland love things in Hawaii. Jason and I live in Oregon. We live near Pacific Avenue on Pacific University. We've about a third of the students in the private university are from Hawaii, and they have an annual luau. So they fly in. The parents fly in once a year to bring, you know, to bring the amaryllis plant, or not the amaryllis, but the the pink plant. You know, the plants and all the different things. People glom on that stuff. The mainlanders glom on that stuff. You'd be surprised. You know, if you decide you want to do something like that, you'd be great at that. I find that you're a very not only an empath, but you're also a very creative soul. You're a beautiful soul, and you are a creative soul. But you're not using that in the full capacity that you can, and you allow situations to sink you down to a zero. You can't do that. You got to pull yourself out of it and say, that's their problem, even though my husband, you may have to take control of the finances. You may need to do something in order to save yourself financially so that you don't get to the point where you're, you know, you're at dire straits and you're wondering how you're going to make ends meet. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So what I want you to do is prepare yourself, set your ducks in a row, and decide what are the things you want to do and write it down. Figure out what you're going to do. Write it down. But not only that, put your parameters, not only just to say, oh, I want to make photography, oh, making lathes, oh, you know, painting. You can write all these things down, but when it comes to work, also, what are the people, what kind of work environment do you want? You want to stay home? What kind of people do you want to deal with? You want people that are honest. You don't want to deal with, you know, drug addictions. You don't want to deal with alcohol. You know, you don't want to deal with people who lie. You don't want to deal with people that are dishonest. You got to really set clear boundaries, because when you do this, you are actually creating, you're manifesting your dream job and your dream situation. Does that make sense?
Yes. I started a couple of small home businesses. My dad collected records for 40 years, and he passed away, leaving about 20,000 vinyl records to me. And I started a small business selling those online. And I also paint. And I started trying to sell my paintings online. And I started to, these are three things that I'm doing. And I also started selling clothing on, like, Poshmark. I look for unique things or things I can upcycle and sell it. But it's been so slow. I don't know if me not putting enough work, I'm also, like, unsure of myself. Like, is any of this going to work out well? Is it worth it?
Girl, it's about marketing. You got to learn how to market yourself. That's what it is.
Okay.
You can sell anything. You can sell a piece of rock, right, Jason? You can sell a rock if you wanted to, if you can market it right. Like I said, people from the mainland love that kind of stuff. If you find something that's unusual, or you can do a painting from Hawaii, you know, that's inspiring from the soul or something, put it in it, start out, you know, with the, you know, the Saturday markets or the local markets, you know, start out there, you know, present things that are really different and go to the galleries, present your stuff. It's all about marketing, girl.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah,
so the Poshmark,
Thank you.
It's kind of hard, and the Poshmark is true, because a lot of people are selling, it's kind of like selling on eBay. There's a lot of competition, but you got to think of something that's a niche, that's something that you're going to stand out, that you, there's not going to be many people that are doing what you do. You know what I mean? I really feel that you can find that creative outlet, but not do what everybody else is doing. So when you're talking about vinyl records, that's great. But you got to, you know, there is, again, it's all about marketing. You don't want to go on eBay, because how many people are probably doing that and you're trying to hit, you know, a certain market? You know, maybe go into the antique and, you know, antique shows, or maybe, you know, music shows or something like that. Or you know, you've got to find your market if you want to continue to do that. But you can't do like everybody else. You do like everybody else, you're just going to be grabbing for crumbs like everybody else. You got to put yourself out there and have the right marketing and the right market for it, targeting the right people in order for you to do that. That'd be awesome, because, you know, 45s and Shembeus and whatever, the old-fashioned vinyl records, you remember that, Jason, either the little tiny ones or the big albums, they're probably coming back, isn't it?
Yeah, there's a resurgence. A lot of people are going back to, they don't like the sound of MP3s or whatever, or even CDs. A lot of people are going back to vinyl.
See? So, you know, you have a good thing. You just got to find the right market and targeting, you know, maybe, you know, an antique show or old-timer show or something like that. Get yourself out there, you know, and just, you know, don't worry about whatever people think. You have the goods. You know, create something with your paintings that are from Hawaii that speaks from your soul. And like I said, market in your, you know, market on Etsy. Sometimes it's not, you know, yes, good, bad, or whatever. But I would probably start locally and go and go in these markets, you know, the Saturday markets, and put a couple of your things on there and go to your art gallery. You know, if you have find the right people, it'll help you get through where you need to be. And you got to set your intentions. I want to be successful because I love what I do. I do. That's what I do. My work I do. I'm in Chinese medicine. I'm a medical medium, medical Qigong practitioner, master in medical Qigong, and a psychic medium. I love what I do. I really love what I do. I enjoy helping beautiful souls that seek my services in order to help themselves. I love empowering and inspiring and just sharing what my knowledge and everything for other people. You got to do that, and I know you are. You just got to have the right marketing and get yourself out there and not worry about other people because nobody's going to be there to judge you. If they are, it's their problem. It's not your problem. You're there to make a difference into the world.
Okay.
Amen.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
You're very welcome. And, you know, it's okay. You know, it's really, you know, it's okay. Just hang in there. Try not to be engulfed by the addictions, you know, the past or present, because, you know, it can drag you. You know, if you want, if you're worried about it, you know, and you're thinking, well, I need something, you know, you can buy a big diffuser, a big one on Amazon. Don't get the small ones, but get the big one, the biggest one you can, so you don't have to change the water every day and a half. And you put yourself some, go to like a new, I don't know, here we call it New Seasons or Natural Grocers, but, or you can get it online. You can go and get essential oil. Get yourself some sage oil, 8 to 10 drops, and let it go and just let it diffuse into the air where the energy is thick, where it's negative and thick. Or you can, you know, you're going to be more complicated. You can go into buying myrrh and frankincense and just and mix 8 to 10 drops of myrrh and 8 to 10 drops of frankincense and mix those together into the diffuser. That way you don't have to sage all the time. It stinks the house. It smells like pot. It stinks. It's just horrible. And you don't have to deal with opening the doors. You can just use it as a diffuser. Make it really easy.
Okay,
but
I'm going to do that.
Meantime, have enough confidence. You're going to get somewhere. I have confidence you will. Okay? And get a hold of me later on Psychic Medium Sherry. Just, or you can just text me on my phone. You got my phone number, so you can just text me on my phone. Okay?
Okay. Thank you so much.
I hope that
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. That will help you.
Bye. All right.
Thanks for calling in.
All right. Happy New Year. All right, Jason.
Yeah. I was just talking about my horrible gambling addiction, and somebody is having an issue with that, the spouse.
Wow. Yeah, it happens. You know, it happens. I'm glad to be very careful, especially when we're on air or I'm doing a gallery. I don't want to be really specific. Sometimes it's just really embarrassing, so I'm very mindful. You know, I can be a little bit vague. I not like to be vague, but especially in a large, wide audience on Paranormal Horizons Radio or, you know, I'm doing gallery, I want to be very mindful and I just, you know, say addictions. But, yeah, then when we had that happen, you know, it puts us in a different realm and, you know, we just got to try and take care of ourselves. She's a beautiful soul. This lady's a beautiful soul, I can tell. So she'll be okay. I think she will. She can take a little bit of my advice, you'll be okay.
Well, gambling addiction is the real deal. I mean, I put it on par with any kind of substance addiction. And trust me, I know. Not about substance. Well, when I was a drinker, I was addicted to alcohol, but I don't drink. I haven't drank in years. But in terms of gambling, yeah. I mean, once you get that gambling bug in your brain, you really have to use restraint to make sure you don't destroy your life and or others. Some people don't have that ability to stop when they should, or to, you know, they take it too far and suddenly they lose their house and their relationships. So, yeah.
Wow. Yeah, that happens. Wow. Yeah, what do you do, Jason? I mean, from the other point of view. By the other side, it's just...
Well, for me personally, it's become so ingrained in my brain, and quitting it, I don't know that that's possible. I mean, of course it's possible, but the reality is I don't want to quit. It's not destroying my life. I am functional. I can have a roof over my head and put food on the table, and so I'm not just throwing every last penny into it. Could I have some very fancy things had I never gotten involved in that? I would probably have a house and a Ferrari had I not gotten involved. But I also enjoy it. It's the level of enjoyment I get from it. It's just very, 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 very expensive entertainment. And so I've accepted that. I've gone through all the phases. I don't get angry. To me, you know, a true gambling addict is somebody where it doesn't come down to the money. To money, I don't care. I know I'm going to lose it. It has nothing to do with the money. It's being able to play for as long as possible. And that is the sign of a true addict, of course, which I am. So it's just about, you know, it's about being able to play and enjoying it.
That's awesome. Wow.
But there are those people that there are countless stories of people that have gone, of course, committed crimes so that they can continue to play. Many people have lost millions of their retirement just because they've become so addicted and hit up the casinos and stuff like that. And it's just one of those things. You just gotta, like the Oregon State Lottery says, play responsibly, which I don't, you know.
Wow.
I could be worse. I could be worse.
Yeah, it's hard to be around addiction. It really is. It's just difficult. I didn't know anything about addiction, you know, until, you know, when I got married. I was married to, you know, an alcoholic and a drug addict. So didn't know anything about that, but I don't want to see that and live that fight again anymore. And I haven't. So it's good to see, you know, it's past me.
It's, you know, with the world that we live in currently, it's very easy to have some sort of addiction. It doesn't necessarily have to be gambling or drugs. I mean, it can be anything. It can be anything from video games to just a simple hobby.
Sugar.
That you've taken too far, and that's all you think about.
Yeah, it could be sugar addictions, you know. I don't think I have a sugar addiction, but I have a problem with sugar. My weakness is carbohydrates, which is cheese and sugar, you know. Every once in a while I have those bad cravings. So, and it's not conducive for bodybuilding, I'll tell you that. You got to cut out most of your sugars if you can. That's the thing. Yeah, very much so.
Yeah, sugar is probably the single worst thing you can eat. Fortunately for me, I mean, every now and then I might have some candy, but I don't eat a lot of cake or ice cream or really anything with a lot of sugar. I'm monitoring my blood sugar to make sure that I don't, you know, being middle-aged and everything, you know, things start to not function at their best. And I know my blood sugar is kind of, you know, borderline diabetic. So just for entertainment, I bought a kit and I check it, but I'm certainly not going out there and piling pie in my face or anything like that. Diabetes, and we've talked about this recently, is really, I don't think people understand how severe that problem that is to the human body. I almost daily get fingers or feet or legs from diabetics, and it's just really nasty. It kills your body, it kills your organs, your heart, everything else, and then you end up losing your limbs because you have uncontrolled diabetes, or worst case scenario, your blood sugar gets crazy high, and then you go into diabetic ketoacidosis and a coma and die. So it's important that we monitor our, particularly when you're older, monitor your blood sugar levels. to make sure you're not slipping into a diabetic situation. So if you were pre-diabetic, that you're not crossing that line, because once you cross that line, yes, it's treatable. Yes, you could possibly even come back from it, but it's a lot of work and all that. I have a friend, I think I mentioned this a little bit ago. I remember a year ago, maybe 2 years ago, he was talking, I mean, he was pre-diabetic, like I am, and just recently, really recently, his vision was all messed up, and he was having all these symptoms, and it turns out he went from that pre-diabetes to full-blown diabetes. In fact, he was in diabetic ketoacidosis, which screws up your vision, and he went to, I don't know, some sort of physician, and they're like, you should go to the ER, but nobody wants to pay for an ER visit. Just to go to the ER, ER is $3,000 in the United States, let alone getting all sorts of tests.
Is it $3,000 to...
Well, anytime I've gone to the ER, it's been $3,000, and that included some basic blood work, an X-ray, and maybe an EKG. $3,000 right there.
Wow.
It's healthcare is prohibitively expensive in the United States. That's why people go to India and Mexico to get procedures done. Whereas a procedure would cost you $30,000 in the U.S., you could go to India and get it done for like $75.99. That's $75. I'm making that up. But, you know, it's exponentially cheaper in other countries.
Yeah, it's so much different, isn't it? Yeah, if we're going to another country. It's absolutely. And the, you know, our health care is just absorbently so expensive that, you know, it really separates the poor and the rich, which, you know, to me is not right. I don't think it's fair, but, you know, it just makes it really hard. But, yeah, I was reading. I'm so sad. I mean, I know that there are people who have addictions and things that are homelessness, and they chose to be because of their, you know, problems and things like that. But there are sometimes unfortunate circumstances. And I was reading in Portland that they were shutting down the shelters because they didn't make quota. They were shutting down. They had to turn away over 650 people. They were living in the shelter. And then they say, oh, we didn't meet our quota, so we're just going to give you a sleeping bag, a tent. Blankets, a tent, and some gloves, and you're on your way onto the streets.
Yeah, and then people.
I don't know. And this was, and it wasn't cold enough, and it was not cold enough. We're in the 20s, you know, we're in the late, you know, 20s or 30s. That's not cold enough. Anyway.
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of have a hard line opinion regarding homelessness. I was homeless for a little while, but I enjoyed the hell out of it because I just went up into nature and lived on a river. So it was great. And I was up there with a bunch of Vietnam vets that were great guys, except at night when they start drinking, they start having Vietnam flashbacks and got a little crazy. But I mean, everybody has bad circumstances, some worse circumstances than other, but I also feel like if you're put in those positions, you have the ability to get out of it. I mean, if you make the right decisions, you know, instead of just falling deeper or starting an addiction and just digging a bigger hole, we all have the ability to take care of ourselves and improve our circumstances, you know. Basically, if you're kicked down, getting back up, and it's not necessarily going to be easy. It's not necessarily going to be quick. But, you know, some people have a lot of resources, such as family, that can help you financially, but not everybody has that. But it's all within all of our power to create opportunity even when things seem dire.
Yeah, and it could be not just addictions, but sometimes, you know, maybe a divorce or something. And, you know, the guy's living, you know, maybe got divorced and he gave her the house. We don't know those situations, you know. he's maybe got a job that's only $15 an hour, and, you know, he has no place to go. I mean, look at the rent. Even, you know, where I live, I don't want to do a disclosed location, but even where I live, you know, it's kind of like, you know, the rent, you can't get a piece of, you can't find a studio for under $1,300 a month. You know, it's just getting that expensive. So it's really difficult. The two-family income is got to be that way. They have to have a two-family income. There's no way you're going to be able to pay rent. And if you got kids, you're not going to. It's going to be hard to feed three mouths or two mouths, you know. So that's the reality of it. And pay health insurance. You know, if you have health insurance, a lot of health insurers don't pay 80/20 anymore. You have to pay a big deductible, or, you know, I see people paying $550 a month. That's a lot if you're only making $15-$20 an hour.
Yeah, you know, me personally, I've been blessed. I have a brand new house that's paid for. I have a brand new car. But that's only been recently. I was renting a room in a haunted basement for years. You know, before
that,
I was bouncing around in people's basements. When I was young, I was couch surfing and doing all that stuff. So, I mean, I've been there. I've been there not having money and not, you know, you're eating those 99-cent Totino pizzas just to survive, or Top Ramen.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, but so lately, I mean, it's only been the last less than 2 years that I've been blessed in a comfortable situation to where I only need to work part-time, and I'm living very comfortably with central air conditioning and everything. But I've been there. It hasn't always been, you know, not everything's always been covered in gold. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it has. And when you go through those things, it adds to me, you know, it makes me humble. You know, I've had both. I've had, you know, from a very wonderful, affluent lifestyle to, you know, really rock bottom. So, you know, and it puts your, you know, life and how you see things in perspective. It really does. Absolutely.
It's getting too expensive to live. You're right. I mean, especially, you know, in places like the Bay Area and Portland and Seattle, the West Coast in general, it's prohibitively expensive to exist. You know, if you're working at McDonald's or wherever, it's hard to, like you said, rent, you know, renting a place $1,300. I mean, I don't even know if, yeah, I mean, I could probably find a place for $1,300, but I frequently see places in upwards of $1,500 and up. I mean, we're talking just apartments. It's absolutely insane, the cost of living.
That's not a studio. Yeah, it's not even a one bedroom. Yeah, it doesn't cover, you know. Yeah, that's crazy. But yeah, I can't believe, Jason, I knew you when we first started on air. You weren't even in the basement. You were living in Gresham at the time, if I could remember.
Well, I was married, living in government subsidized housing. It was essentially an apartment, and I don't want to say it was a dump, but it wasn't. It was nothing special, that's for sure. And then I got divorced, and then I lived in a friend's basement, and then he sold the house. And then I moved to, you know, I have a lot of contacts, and I moved to another lady's haunted basement. And I don't know, I was there 3 or 4 years. And
wow.
Maybe I could have afforded an apartment, but it would have been real tight. It's a lot easier to pay $500 a month than $1,500 a month.
Yeah, that would help. Yeah, definitely. And you ponied it up. You know, you really suffered for a while. You gave up a lot of things to do what you got to do. You know, that's wonderful.
Yeah. So things.
Yeah,
I mean, things can turn around when life is giving you lemons. I know people that have just had years and years of bad luck, and it turns around eventually. I mean, they don't think it does, but I've seen it several times where things seem impossibly horrible for other people, and then year goes by, another year goes by, it's still terrible, and they lose faith that anything's ever going to improve, and then just overnight it improves and life becomes more enjoyable. You gotta stick through it. You just gotta keep your head high and push through it, and things oftentimes will get better.
I got a question before we get off air pretty soon, in a few minutes. What is the Omnicom? Is it actually a new strain, or is it just a cold? What's your take on it?
Well, I don't believe anything that's reported, but according to what they're saying, it's a new strain of the the coronavirus. Is it a cold? I don't know. You know my opinion, because we've talked about it off air, and I probably shouldn't voice my opinion on the whole thing. But yes, I'm fully vaccinated. But I'm fully vaccinated because I was essentially forced to get fully vaccinated. Otherwise, I would not be vaccinated. But what is being currently reported is that the Omicron variant of what's going on out there seems to be less severe, but more highly contagious, and I don't know. I feel like this is never going to end. At first it's the original one, then it's Delta, and then it's Omicron, and they're just going to start coming up with all these different mutation names, and this is never going to go away.
Wow.
Which brings me up to a pet peeve of mine. This drives me crazy, and I've mentioned this several times before, but since I just saw it today, yet again, it's my pet peeve, and I am cursing at people because, I gamble. I'm in places where other people are gambling, and the damn people wear a mask, but they just cover their nose, they just cover their mouths and leave their nose exposed. Now, I don't know if these people are just stupid or if they're just got mask fatigue and they don't want to wear a mask anymore, but it drives me freaking batshit crazy to see that. And I see it every time I go out. I see people doing that. What was it? The day before, a guy had that, his mask around his mouth but not his nose, and he was hacking, coughing, and it was like one of those coughs, this dude's gonna die within the next 3 months. And I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. Like, the kind of cough that's like super deep and you're like, this dude's got pneumonia, why is he even out gambling?
It's inside the lungs and everything. I'm not ready to cough up a spleen.
Yeah, and I'm like, great, this guy, this is like Omicroning everything right now. And I see it over and over and over again, and it just drives me crazy. Now, maybe he's got COPD. Maybe it's got nothing to do with any sort of virus. I don't know. But
maybe he's a smoker too, huh? You never know.
Could be a smoker. But right now, people, when you are in close proximity to other people, they don't want to hear you sneeze and they don't want to hear you cough. Now, I know you kiddos are reflexive actions that are pretty much unavoidable. But if you're going to do that, at least wear a mask appropriately. That's my PSA.
That is my pet peeve too.
Or just
that
stay
is
home.
Really, if you cough, I mean, that's one thing. If you got a tickle in your throat, there is a difference. You got something in your tickle in your throat, or you something happens. But when you're sick, or you're coming down with something, or you've been exposed, stay home. I think it's really selfish to just go to work, or I know you can't afford to go, and you can't afford to leave the kids. You take the kids to school because you have to pay the bills and everything, but you're infecting everybody else. It's just not considerate and respectful. That almighty dollar, you're going to have everybody else's health in line because you're sick or coming down with something. That's just, to me, that's my pet peeve. Or having somebody cough over a cash register just before they hand you cash. That is a pet peeve, too. I see that happen. It's like, why you come to work? I just don't even want to handle them. And I felt like you don't have any gloves, but they're coughing over and they don't even cough in their, down their elbow. They're just coughing in the cash register. So,
it's terrible.
It. But anyway, all you have to do, like I said many, many times before, try and keep your immune system as healthy as possible. Better to have it, you know, really keep your immune system, eat right, you know, try and eat as clean as possible, you know, everything in moderation. And, you know, it's not, you know, these are just my suggestions. I'm not a medical doctor, but these are my suggestions. Just have common sense and talk to your doctor if you have any questions. I have to say that.
That's right.
Talk to your doctor if you have any questions.
Talk to your doctor who's in league with the pharmaceutical companies.
Yep. And as people, as little people, we have to watch. We have to be very mindful, very, very mindful. So, anyway, well, Happy New Year. It was good to talk to you. And I hope that this person, I think her name was Pearl, she said. I hope she gathers some information with our path to move forward.
Absolutely. Well, with that, Sherry, as usual, it is my dinner time. I hold off on feeding until after the show, so I'm going to do that. Hope everybody has a safe and fantastic new year, and I think that's it.
Take care, everybody. Anybody wants to get a hold of me on my Facebook page. Facebook, Psychic Medium Sherry, it's C-H-E-R-I, or you can get a hold of me on my website. It is www.mediumsherry, which is, again, C-H-E-R-I.com. Psychic Medium Sherry, go ahead and go on the contact page. Let me know what services you're interested in, whether it's Chinese medicine or psychic mediumship, and I'll get back to you as early as I can. Thank you. Happy New Year.
Happy
Until
New
next
Year.
Week.
Good night, everyone.
All right. Love you guys. Bye.